morning to you.
Opposing counsel. My name is George Babcock. I'm the attorney representing Jennifer, the in loco parentis parent who is bringing this action today with regards to the minor child Chase. As the recent recipient of the Nobel Prize for Poetry, Bob Dylan, said, when you ain't got nothing, you ain't got nothing to lose. Well, Jennifer's got something, and she stands to lose it by virtue of the adoption that is intended in this particular case. She's an in loco parentis parent by the allegations in her complaint.
Has her right as an in loco parentis person been established judicially?
It has not yet been established judicially, but there was a prior pending action that had been filed prior to the filing of the adoption petition in the Douglas County District Court.
Does our record tell us whether service of the district court proceeding was accomplished before the commencement of the county court adoption proceeding?
I don't believe that it's perfectly crystal clear, but I don't think that there's any question that service had not yet been effected in the district court proceeding.
And does that make a difference?
I don't think it does. It's an interesting conundrum, but I don't think it does. I think the invocation of jurisdiction occurs at the filing of the petition or the complaint. And for the same reasons, you've got the same conundrum that you have to contemplate then with regards to the underlying adoption action, because you have a person who is a necessary party in the underlying adoption petition if, in fact, she is an in loco parentis parent, and yet she has not been served with any process in that case.
If the county court adoption proceeding had been filed before the district court action was filed, you concede it's clear that that court would have acquired jurisdiction to the exclusion of the district court.
I think that is a correct statement.
So why should the mere filing of the district court proceeding without accomplishment of service provide the jurisdictional priority to the district court?
Well, I think it should, because if you look at the thought process behind jurisdictional priority, you've got a race to the courthouse that's undertaken in this particular circumstance. And the idea is that diligence should be rewarded. Now, if a person were to avoid service having knowledge of the prior pending action, should that deprive them of the jurisdictional priority that would otherwise lie under those circumstances?
Is there any suggestion of that circumstance in our record?
I think you may be able to infer that from the filing of the adoption petition, because the record, I believe, reflects that the allegations are that the adoption petition was filed after the contact with the parent was cut off, which occurred after the district court filing occurred.
Well, maybe I should ask it this way. Does our record establish that the service in the district court action was ever accomplished within the 6-month period after which, if it wasn't, the case just disappears?
You know, I'd have to say that I'm uncertain about that, Your Honor. I don't believe that does, but I can say that for certain.
So we don't know from the record?
From my recollection of the record, that would be correct. There may be something there that I don't recall from. This court has previously held in Lapham v. Schwertegger that an in loco parentis relationship is a sufficient relationship arising from a same-sex committed couple to participate in legal proceedings affecting the underlying relationship between the in loco parentis parent and the child.
So what does this in loco parentis relationship then require that if there is an adoption proceeding by the newly married same-sex couple, that adoption would require consent of the in loco parentis parent?
Well, I think that would be the correct conclusion.
So in other words, are you arguing that once you establish that you are in loco parentis and then the parties separate and then there's a marriage of the natural parent to another partner, that there cannot be an adoption unless there is consent by the in loco parentis party?
I am. That is one of the arguments I'm making, Justice.
What better argument can you make?
I can't make a better argument. I can also add that I think that, based on the in loco parentis relationship, there's also a sufficient basis for being allowed to participate in the underlying adoption action to speak to the whether or not the adoption would in fact serve the child's best interest on the basis of that relationship, just as you would deal with a child whose parent had abandoned the child. The relationship's not terminated until the adoption occurs.
Are you saying there's only one thing you have to determine in adoption, and that's that it's in the best interest of the child, or do you have to determine that there also needs to be consent of the in loco parentis parent?
Absolutely, both of those things have to occur. The first is
so why would the in loco parentis want to participate in an adoption proceeding if the only, other than to say you can't do it?
That would be the primary purpose, or to say that, you know, there may, maybe they would agree that it would be in the child's best interest.
Well, then you wouldn't have a lawsuit. Would you?
Probably not.
No.
Probably
and I'm just talking about what you would litigate, and so if the court finds in the adoption hearing that it's in the best interest of the child to have an adoption, but the in loco parentis parent, who's would the court have to make a finding that that person is unfit?
I think you would have. Let's put it this way: consent is the foundation of Nebraska's adoption law. Right. The question really devolves back to: is this person a parent for purposes of adoption law? And I think you have to treat this person as a parent.
And what you're saying is what I think we talked about is that your position is you have to have consent of this person or you can't have an adoption.
Unless another exception would apply. So if you had an in loco parentis parent that had abandoned that relationship as an example.
I understand.
What's your fundamentally strongest argument that someone who may have performed as in loco parentis without having been judicially identified as such is a person whose consent would be required in an adoption?
I think that the relationship exists independently of the judicial determination. In Latham, we indicated that you can come to court and you can obtain judicial imprimatur upon the fundamental relationship that exists. The existence of the relationship is a factual question, and if it's raised appropriately in the county court, then the court has to address whether or not that relationship.
And Latham was with respect to custody and visitation.
That is correct.
Not so far as to declaring the in loco parentis individual as a either natural parent or an adoptive parent. Didn't go the distance as parent is customarily identified in the law.
I would agree with that, Your Honor.
But you want to go one more step, evidently.
Yes, I think it's appropriate. I'd like to cite the court's two cases that were decided by in the New York Supreme Court and the New York Appellate Court that have occurred since this matter was briefed. One was in the matter of Frank G., which is a 2016-05946. That was in the New York Supreme Court. And then the other was in the matter of Brook S.B., which is at 2016-05903. And that's precisely what the courts held in those cases, is that those relationships, the intended familial relationship that arose, should be allowed to continue, and you can't just discard it. Now, granted, again, those weren't custody and visitation cases.
Those were not adoption cases.
Those were not adoption
right.
cases. But once you've established the relationship should endure.
I want to clarify something.
Sure.
Jennifer is seeking intervention based solely on a claim that she stands in loco parentis to the child. Is that correct?
Yes, I believe that is correct.
For the purpose of being heard, or with the proposition that her consent would be legally required?
There are alternatives. For the purpose of being heard and for the proposition that her consent would be legally required.
And our adoption statutes don't contain any intervention procedure. Do you agree
correct.
With that? So you're suggesting that we look to the general intervention statute?
Yes, as the court has done in the past, and as recently as in Ray Jalen D.
And here you're not seeking, or Jennifer's not seeking, to intervene in order to align with one party to the adoption or another, is she?
No, that would be true. She's seeking to align with her own interests and with the child's interests.
She's seeking to object to the adoption.
Yes,
so she's not seeking to intervene for purposes of aligning with either party to the adoption, or with any party to the adoption. Is that correct?
I would argue that she's actually seeking to align with the interests of the child in the adoption, because the preservation of that relationship.
Well, the parties who seek adoption are the mother and her new partner, right?
That is correct.
So there's just a little, there's just, the new partner has replaced your client as in loco parentis, except this couple has now married him.
The new partner has replaced...
Well, the new partner is, they are now married.
They are married, correct. And the old, and my client was prohibited from doing that by virtue of the law in Nebraska prior to Overton fell. And were it not for that fact, we wouldn't be having this conversation. I have my time's up.
Before you sit down...
Yes.
You said something that I want to explore briefly. You said that Jennifer is seeking to intervene to align her interests with that of the child. As I read the complaint to intervene, there is no allegation of next friend or anything of the sort. Did I miss something?
No, I don't think you missed anything. I think that by virtue of the in loco parentis relationship, by virtue of the fact that you have this parent-child relationship that's been created, and that does not disappear unless the in loco parentis parent relinquishes that relationship, as this court has held repeatedly. Hickenbottom comes to mind when I think about that. But the idea that the in loco parentis relationship creates the parent-child relationship, there are many ways to create a parent-child relationship that the law recognizes. This one arises in equity, and it's an equitable relationship the law recognizes. By virtue of the desire to preserve that relationship, she is seeking to provide the benefit not only to herself, but to her child, Chase, of that ongoing relationship.
Assuming that an in loco parentis relationship exists here, do you believe it is one which would be extinguished if the adoption were granted?
Yes, there's case law, and it's dicta, but there's case law to the effect that in Nebraska, that is cited in my brief, that indicates that the granting of an adoption would extinguish the in loco parentis parent-child
relationship. Is it not inherent in the definition of in loco parentis that it is a temporary status?
It's a temporary status, but it can be a temporary status that endures forever. Whereas there are certain relationships that the law contemplates that are intended not to last a particularly long period of time. The foster parent, for example, jumps to mind as that's a temporary relationship and always has been intended to be a temporary relationship. Whereas if you have a relative that raises a child after a parent passes away and they don't go through the formal process of adoption, that relationship as an in loco parentis parent can and presumptively will continue for the remainder of the child's life.
I don't mean to minimize enduring feelings, but I was approaching that just as a legal definition.
Certainly, yes. Okay. No, and I do understand where the court is coming from, that it is not permanent, but it doesn't have a legal end either. It is permanent under the common law until and unless either the in loco parentis parent or the child extinguishes the relationship. The biological parent doesn't hold the keys to the relationship. It's the in loco parentis parent who holds those keys as a matter of law.
Is it your principal argument that an adoption would hinder or reduce your rights as an in loco parentis?
I think it would sever those rights.
Sever those rights.
That is my understanding, is that it would sever those rights. And I think the district court would then turn around and dismiss the pending action for custody.
Is it imperative that the district court find in loco parentis before your client has standing to intervene in the adoption?
No, I don't think it is, because the question of whether the in loco parentis parent-child relationship exists is a question of fact that derives from the pleadings. It's been alleged in the pleadings, and assuming that the district court action was not pending, the county court would be obliged to make the determination of whether the in loco parent was in fact the in loco parentis parent was entitled to proceed.
What's the county court do once that allows your client to intervene? What does it do with the in loco parentis status? Do they determine it at that point?
That would have to be the initial determination, I think, as a practical matter, because if the in loco parentis parent-child relationship, if it was conceded by the opposing party, as an example, that the in loco parentis parent-child relationship existed, I think the county court could proceed without regard to that, would then look to whether or not consent had been given by the in loco parentis parent, or whether an exception to the requirement for consent existed. If neither of those cases existed, then I think the county court would lack jurisdiction at that point in time to further entertain the adoption. On the other side of the coin, if there was a dispute with regards to the existence as to the in loco parentis parent-child relationship, then the county court would be obliged to make a determination with regards to whether or not that relationship legally existed, or the facts supported the existence of the relationship, whereby it would be obliged as a matter of law to recognize the existence. And in that case, if the consent was not provided, then it would not be able to go forward with the adoption absent another exception to the consent requirement under the statutory provision.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Mr. Anderson, good morning to you.
Good morning. May it please court, my name is Terry Anderson. I represent Lindsay and Jessica, the pleas in this case. And we're here, obviously, to ask you to affirm the decision of the county court, which basically dismissed the complaint for interpleader and found that the adoption should proceed. Counsel for Jennifer said that, if I could refer to the parties by their first names, as is our practice in this case. Counsel for Jennifer said that the question of whether or not Jennifer has the in loco parentis status is something that's just germane to important and vital to all these proceedings, and we don't believe that's the case. We believe that there are some circumstances, like the Latham case, where having that status, this court has said, is relevant, but we think that in other situations, that status is not relevant. I think the court's questions have cut to the essence of this case, and that is, does someone who has the status, assuming for a moment that Jennifer has that status, someone who has the status of in loco parentis, is that someone who can effectively veto an adoption proceeding that's otherwise? And I think the answer to that question under this court's jurisprudence is absolutely not. This court has, in my opinion, in the Latham case, it did a lot in the Latham case. It did a lot, but one of the things the court said in the Latham case was that, and I'm not so sure that this isn't now the law in this state, that the statute, the various statutes that were cited in that case by the petitioner seeking to appear in the custody case, the various statutes cited, including the adoption statutes, this court said in Latham that Latham has conceded that they do not confer any statutory rights on one who has this status, and the court said, we agree with that. And if we're going to look for any status or any right to appear in a custody action, it's going to have to be under the common law. And the court said the common law provided standing for the petitioner there because the people of Nebraska, speaking through the Nebraska legislature, didn't say that the only way you can do it is a certain way. That's fine. But that same question, if we're opposed to this court as it is, I guess, today, proposed this court about an adoption proceeding, the answer is quite different. This court has said in Ray Luke, this court said exactly that. In Ray Luke, the court said all adoption issues are statutory. There is no common law for adoption. There is no appropriate time to look to the common law. And in a sense, I see this issue as basically, should the court interpret the adoption statutes, which have no explicit grant of standing or any other rights to someone like Jennifer, should this court interpret it, tweak it, whatever you want to call it, to create that right? And before the court does it, I think it will remind itself of what it said in Ray Luke, these are exact words. This court has said on many occasions, it is inappropriate for this court to extend the rights that are contained in the adoption statutes. And I think that that would be appropriate for the court to be mindful of that today.
There's a vocabulary that's evolved since Luke in terms of who is a parent or who is a spouse.
Well,
which may be critical to your case. In other words, in Luke, we were constrained by the adoption statute that referred to spouses, and the status of same-sex unions was different at that time.
But, of course, the question in Luke is not the same question as posed here. And in truth, if this court were ever going to interpret the adoption statutes in a sort of way to expand the possibilities for adoption, Luke strikes me as a case where it might have done so. As I think it was the dissent in that case, that's what the dissenting justice said. Justice Gerard said that we should do that. And there might have been some basis for it. But here, look what's happening here. Here, the appellant, Jennifer, is asking this court to interpret the statute to fundamentally change who is entitled to basically prevent an adoption that happens. And really, I think what's sometimes lost in the discussion of this issue is what the legislature has done. Why do we have adoptions? Why did the legislature create the specific adoption scheme that it did? Granted, the court in Luke said that it's not the most well-written and well-crafted set of rules, but it is a set of rules that is cogent and understandable.
Let me stretch this out a little bit in the hypothetical. Suppose Jennifer and Lindsay had separated, and Jennifer was the custodial party who raised the child, and then 5 years later, Lindsay decides that she's going to remarry in a same-sex union, or actually remarry maybe in a heterosexual relationship, and then seeks to have her new partner, man or wife, adopt the child. Is Jennifer still out of the loop because she was never married to Lindsay?
There's actually three subsets to your question, Your Honor. First of all, Jennifer is not out of the loop. She is currently proceeding in district court as under Latham to have the district court determine whether or not it's appropriate for her to have a continued role in Chase's life. That case is proceeding as we speak. But
what, is there a trial set?
May I finish answering? The other context of that is that, first of all, if Jennifer had been had custody of the child, we might have a problem with the 6-month residency rule for somebody to adopt under the adoption statutes if the child hasn't been living with you for that 6 months. I understand you're not eligible. But in the end, I think the answer is, if you don't mind, consider my case. I am a step-parent. My wife has an 11-year-old son. He has lived with me for most of his life. And if, God forbid, we should get divorced and she married someone else, as much as I would want to have continued contact with that wonderful young man, I don't think I could prevent an adoption if she and her next person decided to adopt. What I could do is do what Jennifer did, which is go into the district court and say, I want to have a continued role in this child's life, and the district judge will decide. I'm sorry, Your Honor. I hope you don't mind. I wanted to answer that question.
I'm glad you did.
Thank you.
Now will you answer mine?
Yes, I'm sorry.
Thank you.
What was your question?
What's the status of the district court proceeding with respect to Jennifer's efforts to establish in loco parentis status and establish custody?
A very good question. Here's what happened. The district judge, and as an aside, I must say, I think the two judges did exactly what we want them to do here. District court said, I'm going to wait and see what happens in the county court. The county judge made his decision, and then the district judge said, okay, now let's proceed. So right now, we are proceeding in that. There's a trial scheduled. I think it was actually scheduled for next week, but perhaps you know the circumstances of why I'm here, but I think it's been continued because of some reason. But it is pending. It's going forward so that Jennifer is being allowed her opportunity to basically determine if she should have a continued role in Chase's life. And to go back to my
on what, as on, in what status? As in loco parentis?
I'm sorry?
As an in loco parentis status?
Yes. I take it under Latham that Latham has decided that is that she would have the opportunity to participate in a custody visitation sort of case, and she is. And it's not like she's being cut off completely, but she will be doing that, whatever the district judge says that means.
If we were to affirm the county court decision, what effect would that have on the pending district court proceeding?
I don't believe it would have any effect, because the basis of Jennifer's rights to proceed in the district court in custody stem from the common law that this court identified as supplementary to standing and divorce.
So you don't think that an adoption cuts off the rights of an in loco parentis?
I think that Latham said that Jennifer can proceed as her in her status as in loco parentis to raise the question of visitation. Whether the district judge will take into account the adoption that I hope will occur, I don't know what the answer to that question is, but I assume it will be taken into account, but it doesn't cut off rights that she has. The question of cutting off in loco parentis status is a factual question, and many things can do it, really. The real question is, will Jennifer still have the right to be heard? And she will. Let me go back to my real policy argument, because I think it's important. It's important for me. And that is, why do we have adoption proceedings? Why do we have the specific statutory scheme that we have? And if I can continue, the answer it seems to me is that we, in the best of all possible worlds, want somebody to have two parents, and that's why we permit adoption. If yes, a biological spouse, a biological parent can prevent that from happening, but even when that happens, there are still two parents. There is two people we can say, the law says these are parents.
But you would say that the biological mother in this case does not want...
I'm sorry?
The biological mother in this case does not want Jennifer to have any rights in this case.
I don't know.
Isn't that why you're fighting in the district court?
What the biological mother wants is to basically have her spouse adopt the child. And Jennifer wants to prevent that. The goal of the adoption is the adoption, not...
So you think there's some middle ground there where the child can be adopted and Jennifer's rights can still be protected?
I think that the interest that Jennifer has in the child's life will be adequately protected in the district court. But more to the point, I don't think that this court should find that a person who is in the status of in loco parentis can basically stop an adoption, which is what she wants to do. That's the only reason that the complaint for intervention was made, because there are two. The state wants these children as much as possible to have two parents, and the only way that works is if basically there are either two biological parents still around or there are adoptive parents. If Jennifer is able to stop this adoption, there will not be two parents, because the biological father is unknown. And, earlier, the counsel for appellant mentioned a poet, so I'll do the same. When I thought about this case driving down here, the first thing that occurred to me, or kept occurring to me, was that Robert Frost's wonderful claim, wonderful poem, The Death of the Hired Man. And you remember in that poem, Silas the Hired Man, who worked for Beth and for Mary and Warren, had left the farm under unhappy circumstances with Warren. He returned unexpectedly, and Mary found him lying on the threshold of the barn door, weary and forlorn and dying. And Warren said, "Why is he here?" And Mary said, "Warren, he has come home to die." And Warren scoffed, "Home." And Mary said, "Home is a place where, when you have to go there, they have to take you in." These two people are going to create a home with two parents where Chase knows forever, that if he goes there, they have to take him in. That's his home, those are his parents, and that's what he needs to know.
How old is the child now?
The child is six, I believe. And I think for that reason,
if,
everything else to say.
If Jennifer's in loco parentis status had been judicially determined by a final order prior to the commencement of the adoption, would her consent have been required?
Well, two questions depend upon, it might depend upon which court determined for which purpose, but I won't go there. I will say the answer is no. Question is, who under the Nebraska adoption statutes can prevent an adoption? And the answer is biological parent, adoptive parent, and the statute is absolutely. This isn't the first time the legislature's thought about the possibility of other people having an interest in adoption and not included them as people who can object. This is nothing new. And the legislature was aware of In Re Loop. It's been around for 10 years, and the legislature's done nothing to change it. The legislature is content with this court's interpretation of the adoption statute as being specific, explicit, and final. And Jennifer's asking to do more than that, and I don't think it's good under the precedence of the law, and I don't think it's good policy, and I think it's particularly unfair to Chase that he's not allowed to find the two parents who wish to basically be his parents responsible for him for the rest of his life. And for that reason, we would ask you to affirm the decision of the county court. Thank you.
Thank you very much. We will go on to the next case of the day, which is State. Which is State versus Eric O. Roca Sr. I am recused in this matter and also in the last case of the day. Justice Wright.